Okay, today's reading is from Ruth, it's the whole of chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab, and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpha and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. When Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who would become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this they wept aloud again. Then Orpha kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to return or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning.
Probably the last time I'll get invited because I've had that difficult word. I'm always looking forward to coming here, as you know. In fact, when I reminded my wife where I was coming today, she said, "Oh, that's your favourite church." I'm not going to comment on that. But to be honest, I received an email on Monday and I was sad that I was coming here. Why? Well, the reason was I received a message from the new minister at Fry Lane and Braunston to say, could I be free this Sunday just in case his wife went into labour, so I could take the service there. But there was a special reason for that. The special reason was that two young ladies, hopefully by now, will have been baptised. But those two young ladies were the daughters of one of the deacons. But that deacon was a migrant from the Republic of Congo to Braunston. But he and many others who were part of that church, who had also endured difficult, frightening, terrible journeys, brought so much into the life of our church. And so it's such a joy to know that two of his daughters have come to faith and, as I say, hopefully have been baptised. Well, I wasn't needed, so I was glad I hadn't cancelled coming here. I hope you'll be the same. Now, let me point out, this is not my sermon notes. But I needed to bring various things with me. And can we have... There we go. I don't know whether you can all see that. But it's a map. So let's think about maps to start with. I have an atlas here, an atlas of the world, full of lots of detail and interesting outlines and all sorts of things. And very useful, aren't they, to kind of find where you are or even who's in charge of what. And there's a list, great pages and pages and pages of index, so you can find any country, any place that you're looking for. So maps can tell us a great deal, but they also lie. Because our world is round. And in order to represent a globe on a flat surface, you have to distort it one way or the other. So maps can be very helpful, but they also lie. I rely, even now, because I don't have a proper sat-nav in my car, on one of these. Probably some of you have never even seen a road atlas. You've only seen Google Maps. But again, they can be very useful, and most of the time, they tell you the truth. Although this is 2012, so nearly every road has been renumbered by now. So they also can lie. And then, of course, you come to the real thing. Leicester and Coventry area, the Ordnance Survey map. So I'm going to give this to David to fold up while I preach this service. They have so much fantastic detail on it. And if you understand all the symbols, you can work out the incline of the roads you're going on, or the fact it's going to be a single track road and you're not going to be able to turn around even when you want to. All kinds of things you can discover from a map. Well, we have a map on the overhead projector, and I hope you can see it. And in some ways it's helpful, but in other ways it doesn't tell us the whole truth. Now, is there a pointer on this? Where do I find the pointer? Is that it? Anyway, can you see the map? And you can probably see Bethlehem somewhere, can you? Sort of on the left. And you can see that big, ugly shaped blob which looks a bit like a man with a mouth. That's the Dead Sea. And you can see some arrows, some going across the top of the Dead Sea going down and some going back. And I wanted us to have a map because I want to take you on a journey. And it's a journey of migration. All of you, will really know the story of Ruth back to front. But actually, it has a lot of things to tell us. And I want to take you on a journey with Ruth and Naomi. But I also want to take you on a different kind of journey, because I want to take you on the journey of a life. And I don't know about you, but by now, life can seem a long journey. Any of you felt that? It's been a long while, hasn't it? From birth to however old you are. And actually, even growing up and becoming a teenager is a long journey at the time. Looking back now, it's just a blink of an eyelid, but it was a long time then. Waiting for exam results, wondering who I was going to fall in love with, wondering if they'd fall in love with me, wondering what I was going to do with my life, wondering what God would want. It was a long journey growing up. But living is a long journey. And in addition to the geographic journey that I want to take you on, I want to take you also on the journey of a lifetime. So let's begin, as it were, at the beginning, and begin with some of the people. We'll come to the whatever they were later. But let's begin with the people, because that's straightforward. Well, it begins by telling us there was a man and his wife and two sons. And then it tells us their names. There was Elimelech. And Elimelech probably means "my God is king." Pretty good name to have, that, isn't it? My God is king. And his wife's name was Naomi, because she was delightful. And then they had two sons. It goes a bit downhill at this point, because Mahlon probably means something like weakling. And his brother, you can decide whether it's better or not, was called Failing. So it doesn't suggest that their two sons were virile and strong and likely to threaten Goliath, does it? So that's the first people we come across. There's the places. I've pointed out Bethlehem, and I've pointed out the fact that they go on this journey, but what I haven't pointed out is that I'm not sure whether those arrows are right, because they could equally go up as well as go down, because Moab as a country was to the south, but then there were the plains of Moab, and is that what's meant by the field of Moab? Nobody's quite sure. It's also worth thinking about the distance, because one of the things about maps is that 3 inches on that one isn't the same as 3 inches on that one when it comes to reality. You can see, if you look very carefully at the bottom left-hand corner, what the distance is. Well, I think that says, what does it say? I should have it here. I've got my own copy. It should say 30 kilometres, that bit. So we could probably say that their journey was at least 100, maybe 150 kilometres. That was from Bethlehem, where they lived as Epaphrathites, to Moab. But we're not sure which bit of Moab they went to. It was a bit like saying, we're going from Hinckley Baptist Church to Scotland. Are we going to the borders? Or are we going to the Shetland Isles? You see, it's difficult to be sure. Lots of the details we don't know, but actually they're not the important things, because the important thing is the journey of their lives. So that's the places and that's the people. So let's get into the story, and that brings us to the problems. I don't know whether you've noticed, but life does occasionally have a problem or two. You notice that? Maybe it's only me, but that's what I found. And the first problem they came across was famine. Where they were living was supposed to be very fertile and prosperous, but a famine came. And just as we can't be sure about exactly where they went to, nor can we be really sure about the time when this happened. If you go right back to the beginning of this passage, it says, in the days when the judges ruled. Well, the judges ruled for about 400 years. So it's like saying, in the time of the Romans. Not a lot of help, apart from this, that it tells us it was after they left Egypt and entered Palestine, and it tells us it was before they had kings to rule over them. And it also tells us, because if you read the story of Judges, the way it ends was this: in those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did as he saw fit. I was driving down the road to come to you this morning, and every driver was doing as they saw fit. 50 miles an hour was not on most people's radar. Unfortunately, they weren't on the police radar either. But that was their society. They did what everyone saw fit, and it was chaotic. It was difficult. And so, let me see if I can get a... Oh, there we go. If you can read that, you don't need Specsave. But it actually tells you some of the story I've been taking you through. So there was a famine. And what do you think went on in their household when there was a famine? They've got two lads. What do lads need a lot of? So I can imagine Elimelech and Naomi wondering how they're going to feed their two weakling, failing lads. And the time came when they had to take a decision. Do we stay where we are with the people that we know and starve? Or do we make a different choice? A difficult choice. To leave the land that we own and farm, we don't know what's going to happen to it. Do we leave there and go to Moab, where we hear there's plenty of food? Now, Israel's relationship with Moab was quite an interesting one, and if I was giving you a lecture, I'd explain a bit more about it, but I'm not. But at the heart of it, there was a sense that they're different from us, but they're not so different that actually it's impossible or unlawful under God to marry them. They were allowed to marry them. But if you turn now or later to Judges chapter 4, there's a rather horrific story of, chapter 3, of a man called Ehud, who was one of the judges of Israel, and how he managed to get inside the chamber of Eglon, the king of Moab, and stick a dagger in his, forgive me, fat guts, because that's what the Bible actually says. So there was a degree of animosity, let's say, as there have been occasionally between the English and the Scots. But most of the time, we kind of managed to get on reasonably well. And it was the same for Ruth, for Naomi, and for Elimelech when they were trying to think, shall we go to Moab? Well, they went on this journey. And how did they go? They didn't have a camper van. So I can only assume they must have put some of their possessions on a cart and pushed it there. Maybe they did have a donkey to pull it. We don't know that. But it was not an easy journey to go on. It just shows how desperate they were, that they were prepared to make this journey because of this problem that was dominating their lives, that for years they were living in famine conditions. Most people do not migrate without a good reason. And they were the same. And so they get to Moab. They settle down. Presumably, Elimelech found some kind of work, perhaps because they were having bumper harvests there. He was welcome to help reap it and look after it. Who knows? Maybe he was a carpenter. We're not told. But they must have settled there. It wasn't their intention. It says they went to live for a while. in that country. They went as sojourners. They didn't plan to stay. They just went to get some food, maybe stay a few months till things improved back home. But it wasn't how it worked out. They settled there. We're not quite sure again from the text whether it was 10 years after they got there or 10 years before they got married or what, but they were there for at least 10 years. It's about 10 years ago since I first came here. It's a long time, isn't it, you see? But they stayed all that time. And to start with, things seemed to be going absolutely wonderfully well. Well, apart from the fact that Elimelech died, of course. And after they died, the sons got married. Found two Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other named Ruth. I'm sure Naomi was delighted. She got two sons with wives, expected many children to follow on. But there's no mention of any children. So that was probably another problem that they were all wrestling with. And then further tragedy hits them, and Mahlon and Chilion die. So we have three widows struggling in a land which is foreign to Naomi. We don't know what provision was made in Moabite society for those who were widows. Obviously, in Israel, we know there was a certain degree of compassion and practical help given to them. But here we've got these three widows. A problem. Famine, followed by bereavement, followed by childlessness. It wasn't easy, that journey they went on. But then we come to a bright spot. Verse 6. The Lord came to the aid of his people by providing food for them. There must have been a lot of communication between the Moabites and the Israelites, between wherever they were stationed in Moab and Bethlehem. The word got back to Naomi that the famine was over after all these years. And she thinks, what am I doing here? I don't really deep down feel I belong. I've been taken in by these people. My sons have married daughters. We've taken care of one another through all these difficulties of our lives. But deep down, I don't feel I belong. I think if you're a migrant, you probably never do. So she decides, I'm going back home. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home. And so they set off on a return journey. And as they get to the border, Naomi kisses the two daughter-in-laws and they weep aloud. That is, they weep as though they were bereaved. That's what the word means. And the daughters-in-law won't go, even though Naomi has released them from their obligations. We will go back with you to your people. But eventually, Naomi enables the first or the second daughter, Orpah, to go home. Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. It's a sad story, isn't it? Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a new husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? You see, the arrangements were that you were supposed to marry again someone else in the family to keep the family name, to ensure that the land was transferred through your family line. That's what that's all about. But she says, no, it's more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. I wonder why she thought that when they were all widows. Something's going on and eating away inside Naomi, isn't it? My life's more bitter than yours, even though we've all lost our husbands. I've lost my sons too. You've lost them as your husbands. So they weep together. Orpah goes back, but those famous words from Ruth, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. What utter, absolute commitment from Ruth to Naomi. And that tells me something. It tells me that Naomi must essentially have been a good person. Because your daughters-in-law don't have that kind of allegiance to you just because they're your daughters-in-law. They must have got close to Naomi when her husband died. She must have supported them when their husbands died. Their lives were united by a common sorrow of death, because that was one of their problems. And so Ruth says, your people will be my people. That's an incredible thing to say in their culture. I'm transferring my heartfelt allegiance from my people to your people. She was leaving behind her whole family, her tribal connections, everything that was familiar with her, to stay with Ruth. To stay with Naomi, sorry. Your God will be my God. Incredible commitment. Their God was called Chemosh. Naomi's God was called Yahweh. They were different gods entirely, but Ruth is prepared to let go of her faith commitment to journey with Naomi. Where you die, I will die. One of the longings of people who had migrated in their times was to be taken back to be buried where you came from. Jacob, Joseph, and so on. But she's willing to let go of that so that she can go with her daughter-in-law, the mother-in-law. But let's go a little bit deeper into Naomi's pain. We've thought about their problems, we've thought about the people and the place, but let's think about Naomi's pain. Verses 20 to 21. The Lord, don't call me Naomi, she told them, call me Mara, because the Lord has made my life very bitter. It's more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Here was this lady, bereft of her husband and her sons, who feels bereft of God as well. When Joseph was coming towards the end of his life, he said to his brothers, "You meant it for harm, but God meant it for good, for the saving of many lives." Joseph had gone through all kinds of problems, hadn't he? But through his life experience, he'd come to discern that God was with him, God was using him, and God had a wonderful purpose that he was bringing about, because he was going to save many people through him. But not everybody responds to adversity like that. Naomi certainly didn't. And nor did Job. Job felt all his life being peeled away from him. His sons and his daughters died, his crops failed, his animals died, everything was taken from him. And he said, "The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Very pious. But he was wrong. Because the book of Job makes it very clear that it was not God who took away his wealth and his family. It was the enemy. It was Satan that did this. And that's why, to be honest, I'm not too keen on a song we often sing. You give and take away, you give and take away. My heart will choose to say, Lord, blessed be your name. Well, if you feel that's what's happened, it's wonderful if you can say, blessed be your name. But actually, in the land that is plentiful, where your streams of abundance flow, blessed be your name. When I'm found in the desert place, though I walk through the wilderness, blessed be your name. That's fine. But it wasn't Job's case that God took things away. And I don't believe it was right that Naomi thought her life was bitter because the Lord has made it that way. It's how it seems when we go through difficulties, but it's not necessarily the truth. Eileen's reading a book called God on Mute. It's a book by the man who started 24/7 prayer. It's a title worth thinking about, isn't it? God on Mute. You got a mute button on your phone? If you press it, you can't be heard. Some phones, when you press it, you can't hear the other person either. I don't know how yours works. But who's pressed the button when we can't hear God? Is it us? Or is it God? Often we think it's God, but it's us. And we may well have pressed that button accidentally without realizing it. That's what happens to me. I'm talking down the phone and can't hear anybody and can't hear what they're saying or anything. And I think, what have they done? But it's me. I've got it wrong. And sometimes, at least, when we feel that things have gone so wrong and we can't hear God and we feel he doesn't care, it's us that have pressed the mute button. Not God. Because as Sadie reminded us, God has promised that there is nothing that can separate us from his love. Nothing in life can do that. So when we're going through a time of deep, distressing pain like Naomi was, don't ignore or deny the pain. Of course not. Often you can't because it's slashing across you like cold, stormy waves. You can't ignore it. And I would encourage you, don't pretend to be very pious either. Because that's another human reaction. We curse and swear inside us, if not to other people, but when we come to our quiet time, dear Lord, thank you for all. As you said, he knows already. And it's so important to know that God will not reject or punish us when we're going through the worst times of our lives and we don't know how to cope and we feel he's against us. God will not reject us. You've only got to read the Psalms to realize how God welcomes honesty. But it can lead us into a kind of distorted way of understanding life and what's been going on for us. This is what Naomi had to say to the ladies who came kind of to welcome her back. The Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Was that the whole truth? When she went away, why did she go away? Because the pantry was empty. There was a famine. Yes, she had a husband. Yes, she had two sons. And it's important that we recognize the value of our families. But it wasn't the whole truth. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Was that true? Did she come back alone? Did she come back unaffirmed, unvalued? What had Ruth just said to her? I'm prepared to leave everything behind because I love you so much and want to care for you. Is that being empty? Doesn't look like it to me. And so we need to be careful when we're going through tough times. We don't deny them. It may feel God has rejected us like it did with Job, but it's not the case. And let's try to see the gifts as well as the problems. Because God had not left Naomi alone. He had given her this heart-wrenching love of Ruth. And what is more, though she didn't see it, she had a promise. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. She came back to a time that was full. It was a promise from God there in the world before her eyes. It was God's glimpse of heaven for her. She had a promise. And when I'd finished preparing my sermon, I think it was Friday afternoon, I was looking around my books and I saw this one, The Life God Blesses. And I want just to recap very quickly, I've got to put those up, about the life God blesses, because actually Naomi's was a life God blesses. And our life, even when we're going through terrible situations, is actually a life that God is wanting to bless and is blessing, if only we can see it. You see, Naomi was richly blessed, but couldn't see it, and it didn't feel like it. And the life God blesses is the life of ordinary people. People like you and like me. Naomi wasn't a kind of hero in the Old Testament. She doesn't appear in Hebrews chapter 11, for instance, as a great example of faith. And she doesn't even get in the genealogy at the end of the book. She was not a notable person. She was just a very ordinary person. And in this life's long journey that we go on, there are many difficulties we face. If you've gone through life without some serious loss, I'll be amazed. If you've gone through life without problems in your family, count yourself very fortunate. If you've gone through life without some really tough times when you wondered what was going to happen next and how you'd survived, you're unusual. Because for ordinary people, life does have lots of ups and downs. It's how it is. And Naomi came from an ordinary place. Bethlehem, we kind of know of and celebrate because Jesus was born there, but that's a long way down the line. Bethlehem was just a little village in the southern part of the Promised Land. Nothing special about it. And Naomi prayed a very ordinary kind of prayer. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." I've called it a prayer, but it's more like a wish directed towards God. It's not one of those fantastic prayers that we can find in the prayer book or that sometimes ministers pray. It was more of a wish than a proper prayer. And I don't know what your prayer life is like. I don't need to know. But if you feel it's not as good as it should be, then you're probably with the majority. That's how ordinary people are. They're sometimes very busy. They sometimes don't know what to ask. They sometimes fall out with God. They sometimes have doubts. That's how it is for ordinary people. Certainly like me, and probably like you. Life is a long, tough journey, isn't it? But our God is a God for that journey. And our God is a God for ordinary people like us. And the journey's not over till it's over. And even in our troubles, even in our struggles, even in our desperate moments, even when we kind of wonder whether we'll believe in God tomorrow, God is seeking to bless us. And more than that, he's not only blessing us, he's working out through us how to bless other people too. And that becomes our blessing. You see, this is chapter one. You know the end of the story. There's this strange relationship that Ruth ends up with Boaz, and they have a child, and the women say, "Praise be to the Lord who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. You see, all through this long journey with its ups and its deep valleys of darkness and despair and distress, God was at work. And God was at work to bring her his blessing, and through her, to bless others. And so I ask you this morning, wherever you are on that long journey of life, to dare to believe that God is not against you. He's for you. And he has not left you empty. He is working to fulfill, to restore, to redeem, and to save. And one day, when we come to the end of life's long journey and enter into the home he has prepared for us, we shall see and we shall understand that he blesses ordinary people like you and me. I'd like to share with you and give you a moment of reflection. A song which means a lot to me. It's called "Oceans or Where Feet May Fail." You call me out upon the waters, the great unknown where feet may fail. And there I find in you the mystery, an ocean deep, my faith will stand. Your grace abounds in deepest waters. Your sovereign hand will be my guide. Where feet may fail and fears surround me, you've never failed and you won't start now. Spirit, lead me where my trust is without borders. Let me walk upon the waters wherever you would call me. Take me deeper than my feet could ever wander, and my faith will be made stronger in the presence of my Saviour. Naomi went on a long journey. It wasn't what she planned, but she went on a long journey, the journey of life. And one day she would hold in her arms that little life, the fulfillment of God's promise to her. God blesses ordinary people like you and me. And blessed be the name of the Lord. Amen.
Risen King, delight to bring him praise. Let's tune our hearts in and sing, "How great is our God."